Good to see everybody. We're ready for a full day today, aren't we? All right, so we're going to mix it up. You remember last night when we started, we did this, you know, greet each other, high fives, fist bumps, all that. We're going to kind of do that, but today, as you actually greet one another, you're going to impart what is meaningful to you. So, give you an example. For me, one of the things that is inspiring for me as an individual and that I consider myself an ambassador of to every individual relationship that I get to meet, whether it's here in the U.S. or around the world, is hope. I love to bring hope to people. So I don't know what you feel is inspiring for you, but I want you to think about it for a moment. What is it that when you get motivated, when you think about, boy, if I could gift something from me to others, maybe it's joy, maybe it's Thanksgiving, whatever it is, what is that for you, okay? Got it in your mind? So now when you greet everyone today, instead of counting your greetings, that's yesterday's news. Now, today, when you greet them, you're going to go, I give you hope. I give you hope. I give you hope, all right? Whatever yours is. You got what yours is? You got it? Yes? Got it inside? You ready to give it to someone else? Everybody, on your feet. Take a few moments. Greet each other. Give them some of yourself this morning, all right? Well, thank you for doing that. So let's do a quick little recap from yesterday, all right? Let's review. Just openly have a open floor discussion. Think about what we did last night, what we talked about, maybe what was meaningful to you, and just begin to share it with the group. So what did we do last night? We did some affirmations. By the way, did anyone leave here and actually do an affirmation with their spouse or someone else? Anyone do that? Did you try it? Any testimonials or reports? Did anyone pass out and did your spouse just sort of go, okay, where's my husband and what have you done with him, that kind of thing? You know, seriously, if you've got a report, I'd love to hear it. It's encouraging. Here's the thing. When we actually try these tools out, you're not going to be perfect doing them at the beginning. So it's just like anything else. Practice, practice, practice. Remember what was shared. Remember the nuances. Be careful of saying things like, I want to share something with you, or I want to thank you. No, thank you. All right. In other words, that direct communication that's a part of those affirmations, really what allows you to deliver them and be proficient at them, all right? Good deal. By the way, just to recap too on affirmations. In the Bible, you know, we talked a little bit last night about Genesis, how when God created the heavens and the earth, he actually did affirmations over his creation every single day. He said, this is good. Next day of creation, he said, this is good. Next day of creation, this is good. Do you know what he did when he got to us? He did a double affirmation. He said, this is very good. When Jesus entered into his earthly ministry, and John the Baptist had seen Jesus afar off, and he said, behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the what? Sin of the world, that's right. So here's Jesus coming up, and Jesus comes up to John the Baptist and says, I need to be baptized by you. And John the Baptist goes through this back and forth. Eventually, John the Baptist follows through and actually baptizes Jesus. Does everybody remember what happens next? It says that the heavens opened, right? And the Father spoke, and he said, what? Yeah, this is my beloved Son. This is the Son whom I love and in whom I'm well pleased. I have a friend of mine who works for a precision manufacturing company. I was telling this to Merv last night, up in just north of Boston, about an hour. He's leaving the company this week. Last week he told his boss. The boss called the senior staff together because Mark is on the senior staff. Mark's been with the company over 7 years. This was the first time that the boss gave an affirmation to Mark. Mark calls me up and he said, Patty, to be honest with you, I was blown away. I had never heard those words in my entire time here, 7 years with the company. Now I'm leaving. Think about it. Funerals. They're dead. They're gone. Oh, that guy, man, he was the greatest, man. You know, and we begin to gush over him. They're dead. Hey, guys, let's tell each other while we're still alive. It's far more meaningful. I'm not going to remember your affirmations when I'm dead, and no, neither is anyone else. Powerful, simple tool. Great. What else did we do last night? Yeah, we discussed change, didn't we? You know, four levels of change, right? Knowledge, attitude, behavior, relationships, the dynamics of change, those nine dynamics and nine strategies. What else? Yeah, we talked about transparency and vulnerability. And by the way, just as a reminder, just because I do what I do in front of you, I'm not asking you to do what I do. Is that clear? Right? You're not Patty. But you build towards transparency and vulnerability. The healing in my life and the things that have allowed me to get to this place took a while, right? So as God instructs you and as you kind of move into these places where transparency becomes a little easier, I like to term it this way. Crawl, walk, run. Don't try to run out of the leadership gate. You may trip over something and fall flat on your face, all right? Good. What else? That's right. We talked about bumper buddies that keep our flies up. I've got the good friend in James, man. We are friends for life from now on. He actually failed to come to me this morning and go, "How you doing here, buddy? You got it up? You checked? You got me. All right. All right. Thank you." Walk out of the house. Yeah. Anyways. What else? Any other things? Yeah, social anxiety. That unique combination of a fear of failure plus a motivation to succeed creates that sort of inner sort of angst that we feel sometimes when we're in new situations. Happens a lot to us. All right? You're going to learn a little bit more about the power of our brain and being able to navigate those social anxiety settings with the way we think. All right? Good. Anything else?
The enemy works in the dark.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, the enemy works in the dark, and when we bring it into the light, it loses its power, all right? In Proverbs 28:13, there's a sort of a variation on this same theme that says, what you cover, God uncovers, and what you uncover, God covers with his grace and mercy. So, for us, as children of God, as sons and daughters of the Most High, as those who have been fearfully and wonderfully made in his image, he's not out to shame us. He's not out to destroy us. He's not out to condemn us. That's the work of the enemy. He's actually out to empower us and make us look more like our older brother, Jesus. Right? He can't do that if we're walking in our muck. So it's steps that help us to get stronger, better, smarter, to think like he does, right? Good. Anything else?
Go beyond the box.
Yes, to go beyond the box. We've all got a certain way of thinking, right? We think inside this thing that we call the box, and we get encouraged or challenged to think differently, so we say, hey, let's think outside the box, right? Well, We all know that when we step outside or get outside of this certain way of thinking, that things are going to get uncomfortable, right? And if they get uncomfortable, what do we often do? Yeah, we don't just get back into the box. What do? Come on, tell me. Yeah, crawl. Now, why do you remember crawl, by the way? Yeah, I demonstrated it. I'll show you how science shows us that when you do certain types of communication, this is in the afternoon session, that your communication is actually going to be more effective if it's more than just a tell-me style, okay? And a lot of our communication is only one way in its orientation, but there's a lot of ways to communicate. You can demonstrate, you can do small groups, you can discuss, you can do all kinds of things that allow communication to be more effective than it is today. So we'll do that this afternoon, all right? That's right. That 3 to 15%, it's just a little bit that can create that shift. Reinforced this morning when we heard the devotional around, you know, Joshua and Caleb, the tipping point too, that said, hey, we see things completely differently than anyone else does. And they brought that good news, all right? They brought the good news. They brought the positive energy. Anything else? Yeah, that's right. Living or thinking beyond the bubble. That's that new phase, that new analogy that I put in front of you. That a bubble is formed when the pressure on the inside is equal to the pressure on the outside. And we also know that pressure changes. Sometimes it's driven by me. It's that inside pressure, the things that I'm dealing with that creates the change. Sometimes it has little to do with my control. It's out of my hands. It comes from the outside in, right? Either way, we know the pressure is going to come, right? And if we're continuous improvement leaders, we're actually looking for the pressure. Smile. If we're continuous improvement leaders, we're actually looking for the pressure. Some of you are still like, really? Are you serious, buddy? Because when we look for the pressure, we welcome the change. We basically say, this is good for me. If it doesn't kill me, it makes me stronger. That's right. All right? So, all of that, part of that new way of thinking. Good stuff. In your meetings, guys, and we'll talk about this when we talk about that Waddle meeting model. If you're not reviewing what you've been doing, there's a good possibility that what you've been doing is not going to be sustainable. The people that you're with need to hear from you. They need to reiterate and they need to revisit. Just because it's something that was done yesterday doesn't mean it's not worth discussing. Because a lot of times it's in the review, it's in the revisit that you're going to take nuggets and certain things that are appropriate for your teams to go to the next level. So if you're not including review in your meetings, begin to put it in your meetings. Put it in that beginning part that allows those meetings to be more effective. Because it allows you to also find out what they heard. One of the biggest things that trips leaders up is what I call leadership by assumption. I know it's never happened to anyone in this room. It's the assuming that, oh yeah, they got that. And then you never actually find out whether or not they got it, right? And so as the leader, what do? You move on. Guess where everyone else is? Hey guys, we're over here today. That's because they're still in yesterday, right? They're still trying to figure out the things that may be critical, that they didn't clearly understand, right? So the review process allows you to take the good stuff and the stuff that maybe didn't get quite understood, massage it a little bit so that everybody's on the same page. Make sense? Any other questions or comments before we dig into today's stuff? You guys want to have some conflict today? Not really, but we can talk about conflict, right? Because it does happen a lot in our lives, right? So we're going to talk about that in a moment. But before we get to that, I want to do one more exercise with you based on last night's information. On about the third page, there's a page that's at the top. It says, four levels of change exercise. Did anyone actually take this and do something with it privately without my instruction? You could have. It was just in your notes, but we're going to do it today intentionally, all right? So there's a statement at the top that says, identify an area in your work or in any of the relationships that you have right now that is challenging and or changing, all right? So I want you to take about 45 seconds. Don't get too in-depth about it, But think about something that is personally or professionally challenging or changing for you and write it down, okay? And in a moment, we're going to pair up and we're going to do a quick little four-level change evaluation on it, okay? So take about 45 seconds, look at it, see if you can write something down that's either challenging or changing for you personally. Could be work, personal, business, whatever it might be. Okay, everybody got it? All right, in a moment, you're going to find a partner. And as you find your partner, I want you to just think about the three levels primarily that are in front of you. Level one, which is, so what if you could change the knowledge or current pattern of thinking around that challenge or change that you're experiencing today? What would it look like? All right? So take a few moments and talk about that. If I could have a different thought than I'm having right now, what would it be? And exchange that. And then go to the next one. We'll just do the first two levels because of time. And do that one too. And as the listener, after you hear what they say, ask them this question. Is there any attitude that is keeping you from changing your mind about that situation? So you get to be a bumper buddy to that person in a moment, all right? You're going to say, so do you have an attitude that needs to be adjusted towards this? Is there a feeling that keeps on cropping up that could also be at play here? And do you think the new thought that you're about to engage in is going to move that feeling into a good place? So have that little exchange and sort of take what they've written down as their personal challenge or change and become a bumper buddy support with them for about a 3.5 to 4 minute conversation. Give each other enough time to each share, and then we'll come back together. All right? So everybody stand up, find a partner, and once you find your partner, start that process with each other, all right? Does everybody understand what we're doing, by the way? Is there any questions about what we're doing? We're good. All right. Again, simple tool here, guys. Oftentimes, we don't take the time to actually look at our challenges and changes in a way that we can affect the change. So this is a simple process that you could revisit often, all right? And it's based on the four levels of change. Do I have the knowledge? Is my attitude right? And will that knowledge and attitude allow me to make the appropriate actions and behaviors that I want, okay? I had a great conversation with Brian just briefly about some things that he wants. And we just, I asked just a couple other questions, just digging the layers back around what he was sharing with me. And so again, it's not real rocket science that we're doing here, is it? But it is really intentional, right? And the intentionality required for us to really be effective in any of our roles and relationships is so big. So it's just something that I wanted you guys to experience in a small way and then take from here and use again and again in any of the other relationships. Because if you've got this dynamic of challenges and changes going on in you, I guarantee your people do too, right? Say yes, yeah. So we're going to be able to help them along too, right? You're going to be able to help teach, train, and equip them. And this is what this is about, all right? We're developing leaders at every level. If it's a leader in your family you're trying to develop, then give them the tools that they need to be effective. There isn't a father or a mother in this room that doesn't want their children to surpass them and be greater than them. Am I right? Amen? So, are you giving them what they need to be successful? Some of it is probably in place already. Some of it needs to be built in. Again, we're in a journey. We're on a process. We're in the midst of metamorphosis right now. We're becoming who God created us to be. So No condemnation. We all get to look at this and we go, wow, I'm going to walk out of here with some things that are going to make me stronger and better. And I feel really good about it. The conviction should be that uncomfortable thing that says, I've got room for improvement. Right? That's the conviction. That's the reason why God gives it to us, to improve us. He doesn't do it to condemn us. He loves us. Right? So, things to think about. Hopefully a helpful tool for you. All right, so let's talk about relationships for a little bit. All right? I want you to think about a relationship continuum, okay? And on one side of this relationship continuum are highly relational people. And on the other side of this relationship continuum are highly transactional people. All right? Now, I want you to think about yourself and where you might be on this continuum. Are you more towards the highly relational, that the relationship is really the thing that's important to you? Or are you more on the highly transactional, that getting things done, doing things is something that's really important to you? Think about yourself for a moment, all right? Maybe even draw yourself a little relational continuum line on a piece of paper or something, right? A little bit more definition around these two. For the highly relational person, when they wake up in the morning, one of the first things that they think about are the people that they're going to get to be with today, right? It's very motivating for them. For the highly transactional person, when they wake up in the morning, do you know what they think about? The list of the things that they're going to get done. As a matter of fact, when they went to bed, they reviewed that list. That's a highly transactional person. Now, I know that some of you are trying to figure out, where am I at in this, all right? So let's think about this for a moment. If you consider yourself highly relational, raise your hand. See a show of hands, all right? More on that end of the continuum. If you're married and your spouse is on the other end of the continuum, raise your other hand. There you go. Look at there. There's your divorce rate. All right? So look, guys, relationships equal conflict. Most marriages have a husband and wife that are uniquely different than each other, and that's okay. That's actually a good thing. When Leslie and I got married, I was the highly relational guy. Everything was a party. Everything was about bringing people together, all right? Everything was about getting together with my buddies, all right? It wasn't about doing things. Leslie was the highly transactional perfectionist who wanted her home perfect. And when I didn't recognize what she needed in our relationship, we had conflict. Why don't you ever, bum, 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 bum. How come we don't, bum, 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 right? And the expectations that a highly transactional person has versus the expectations that a highly relational person has are different, right? And then every once in a while, the highly transactional and the highly relational person, it's like a car wreck. That's your conflict. Because your expectations and theirs were not met, and all of a sudden, you're beginning to have what I call intense fellowship. All right? Around that particular deal. But watch this, guys. What if we could become something that was more in the middle? What we like to call relational. This is a TL term. Relational. It's when the highly transactional person is conscious and intentional about becoming more relational. And it's when the highly relational person is conscious and intentional about becoming more transactional, right? Because if we can actually build towards the middle, we can do both. And we can have the best of both worlds because they are needed to function together and for us as leaders to be highly effective in our roles and responsibilities. So watch this. Here's how you know that you're being relational, all right? It's when the relationship is so deep that no transaction will ever separate you. The relationship foundation is so solid that you can actually put the transactions on top of that foundation of relationship. If you and I build a relationship out of transaction, and the transaction goes in a negative, wrong way, what usually happens to our relationship? Come on, talk to me. It's over, right? It separates. But if I build a foundation of relationship first, and then we do a transaction together, and the transaction doesn't work favorably, there's a much higher possibility that we're going to actually remain at the table. And if we can stay at the table, we can actually model something that is biblical in its orientation to those who may not have that orientation. And we can witness to the fact that we are actually living a different type of leadership mindset. So to be relational allows you to understand that no transaction will ever separate you. There's no conflict. There's no issue. There's nothing that could actually pull us apart. Anybody know what it says in Romans chapter 8? It says, nothing can separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. Do you know that Jesus looks at every single one of us and he says, there's nothing you can do that will cause me to love you any less? Now that's powerful. There is nothing. There's no adultery, there's no issue, there's nothing. No, if you're a murderer, guess what? There's nothing that you can do. There's nothing that you can do that will ever cause me to not love you the way I love you. That's God's promise to us. Now, if I'm going to become a transformational leader that looks like Jesus, sounds like Jesus, talks like Jesus, walks like Jesus, wow. If I had that attitude in me, what would my relationships look like? Phew, that's powerful. Now, that's what we're going after. I'm far from that, guys. I'm far from that, but that's what I'm pursuing. That's what I'm going after. Here's the second piece that's really good. It's when you can actually look down on either end of that continuum. You can look at the relational people. Because, by the way, hey, transactional people, what do the relationship people do to us? Come on, the highly relational people, they talk too much, they slow us down, they frustrate us, right? Come on, we got things to do. Come on, let's go. You can talk at the church social. We got things to do, all right? Now watch this. Hey, highly relational people, what do these transactional people do to us? Huh? It's always do this, do that. What have you done for me lately, you know? Right? They frustrate us. On both ends, that frustration builds. But if you're relational, you're not frustrated by either one. You just know that it's an ism. They exist, and because highly relational people exist and highly transactional people exist, as the leader, you get to bring them towards the middle. You get to help them become relational. Sound good? So now, we're going to become bubble jumping, relational, transformational leaders, okay? So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. Any questions about what this looks like? It's a challenge because most of us have been either that are in that bent, are raised that way. It's such a locked in sort of mindset that for them, it's the only way they know. So what you do is you take their strength and you begin to work it in a way that says, by the way, everyone doesn't have your strength. I need your strength, but I also need Jim's strength. And right now, Jim feels marginalized. So if there's any way that you can even exchange some brief conversation about who he is, what his needs might be, if there's anything that he needs to engage today, that one little movement towards him is going to help him move towards you. So it's these ideas that you leverage their strength. You're not going to change them overnight. Crawl, walk, run, all right? We got the baby steps first. So to assume that they're going to move immediately into this relational orientation, going to be a progressive thing. But let them know that from your standpoint as the owner, it's the expectation, right? This is our expectation. We're gonna get a lot done, and we're going to have fun. We are a both-and company, and I want you as leaders to be a both-and leader. That's my expectation of you. By the way, you'll be evaluated on that every year. I'm going to ask how that's working for you. I'm going to come around on occasion and say, so how's the relationship side of who you are, Mr. Transactional? I'm going to come to you and say, hey, how's the transactional side of who you are, Mrs. Relational or whatever, right? So if we don't evaluate or set the expectation, none of this becomes a reality, okay? And so as leaders, set the expectation. Put it out there and say, this is what we're trying to achieve. I'm not asking you to do it overnight, but we are moving towards this desired end, right? Good possibility that we're going to get at least close to it. So that's how you entertain it within a team that's not familiar with it, or with a leader that has a strong bent the other way. Good stuff. All right, let's keep going. Let's talk about a tool that can help us navigate conflict when it does come up, all right? We have a process, and by the way, I'm going to take you very quickly through this process. Oh, this is a African proverb, by the way. If you want to go fast, go alone, which, by the way, transactional people, most of them feel like if I needed help, I'd ask for it because they feel very competent to do it by themselves. They love to work by themselves because they get a lot more done, a lot, in their mind, a lot faster, okay? So, but watch this. If you want to go far, go together. So it's an African proverb that we have no idea where it came from, but we love it, and it fits so well into this relational orientation, okay? So now let's talk about this social covenant tool. How do we want to treat each other when we're together? So one of your handouts actually has a exercise that we may get to in part at another session, but today we don't. I just want to make sure you get the tool and the things around this in the next 10 minutes or so, okay? So when you do this process and when we've done it, number one, we know that conflict comes up. So what if we actually had a conversation about the possibility of when conflict would arise in our businesses, in our teams, in our families? And you do that by saying, how do we want to treat each other when we're together? So if you were to throw out two or three ideas of how we should treat each other, just give me a quick one, real quick.
Respect.
Respect. What else?
Patience.
Empathy. Yeah. What was that?
Listening.
Yeah.
Honesty.
Openness,
humility,
generosity. So you guys can see very quickly, by the way, is any of those that were brought up, does anyone have a problem with those? Just out of curiosity, because that's how you do it. Assuming that we can all agree on how we do want to treat each other, we've put six or seven on the table right there. Does anyone have a problem with any of them? Everyone said, no, those are good. Did you have a problem with one? No, that's how we would do it. We'd actually stop. We'd stop and we'd go, yeah. What is it? Someone says, yeah, I need you to define respect. What do you mean by respect? By the way, the early process of establishing an agreement like this usually goes pretty well. It's when you actually try to execute the agreement that things start to go badly. Okay? All right? So the other thing that we put in this, you might put the word love or care. You know, if you don't want a really gushy-gushy term in there, put the word care for each other, all right? It's actually part of respect, but The other thing is that we put in the, that we encourage others to put in is no gossip. Because gossip is relationship cancer. And it destroys relationships everywhere, organizations everywhere. Gossip is running rampant around the world, okay? So once we establish that, we have to ask a second question, which we have found is rarely, if ever, talked about, which is, assuming that we can agree on how we want to treat each other, what happens when one of us fails the agreement or violates the agreement? What is our process going to be? Do we have a process? Or do we just assume that it'll get worked out? And it's in this that most of the conversation has not happened, okay? So in a moment, I'm going to have Brian just pop up a another segment of the TL On Demand where we would not only talk about our process, but we'd also include how we would approach one another. Because imagine if we actually had a way where we predetermined before that engagement had to take place, which is going to be what? Uncomfortable. Conflict resolution is not comfortable, is it? So because we know it's going to be uncomfortable, if I'm prepared in advance to address the conflict in a certain way, then the chances of resolution taking place are going to increase dramatically. So when you hear how we might approach one another, contextualize it that way, okay? When he's done, I'll pop up a tool that I think will be really helpful along with the discussion around gossip so that we can sort of tie a bow on this real quick. So, Brian, go ahead and pop that in and play that for us.
We discussed how we want to treat each other using a tool we call the social covenant. Now, if the social covenant is broken and one of us does not follow the behavior we agreed upon, we'll want to approach that person face-to-face in the appropriate manner. So our suggestion is that you have a process in place that would do something like this, that you would agree that if someone broke that agreement with someone else, that the person that they broke it with would agree to go to them one-on-one. And they would sit with them and share with them how they were feeling based on that they didn't get treated the way they thought the agreement said they would. Let's talk about some ideas that will help you approach others. We find that if we do these four things, that over 95% of the time, conflict gets resolved in one meeting. The first thing we say is to go in humility. Be open to being wrong. In other words, go with the whole mindset, I may be wrong. Maybe even say to that person, I may be wrong, but could I ask you a question? Could I share something with you? Number two, we say go in pre-forgiveness. In other words, we're going to rebuild the relationship, not because we're angry, not because we're hurt. We've already forgiven what took place. The third thing we say is go in love or care about the other person. The definition I use of love here is that I care more about the other person than I do how they feel about me. Because it's more important to me to stay in that relationship, for that to be strong, and also to be sure that if they're doing these things to other people, that I care enough about them to tell them so they don't continue hurting other relationships. And the fourth one, we say go in truth. Give 100% of the truth. You know, many times when we go to people, we only give them 80% of the truth because that last 20% is just a little too difficult to bring up. And then the very next time they mess up, we see them through the lens of the 20% that we didn't share instead of the thing that we got resolved before. And again, let me say this. We found that when we go approach somebody with the attitude of these four things, that well over 95% of the time, that conflict can be resolved between two rational people. If that didn't work, maybe the agreement would say that we'll get someone else or maybe one or two other people to sit with us again and have the conversation again. And if that didn't work, maybe the management team, maybe the parents, maybe the leaders of any organization, maybe those groups, maybe the church, but whatever it is, that some group, agreed upon group, would sit and they would say and listen and make a decision over, did they really mistreat them or did they not? and they would make a decision. Now, once that decision was made, somebody either apologizes or leaves. Either the person that brought the accusation, if the group said, sorry, we don't think they were disrespectful, for example, then they need to apologize for bringing the accusation. If the person that they brought the accusation to, if the group said that was very disrespectful, it's important that they apologize. Now, we put together a template of a social covenant for you in case you may want to use it. You can find it in the appendix at the back of your manual, or you can download it right here off of the PDF file. But be encouraged. This social covenant can be a game changer in your organization.
You all don't have that. I'll figure out a way to get it to you. All right, but as a maybe post-conference template that I send out to you. But what I did put in your packet is an exercise that you could either do after the conference or sometime even over a break and begin the discussion. So what's this look like for us? And it's laid out pretty clearly about how to engage that. So let's just take a look at a quote that we think is pretty relevant to this. Tell me how you measure me, and I'll tell you how I behave. If you measure me in an illogical way, don't complain about my illogical behavior. It's another way of saying what you allow is what will continue. Okay? So what are you allowing in your environments, in your cultures, in your organizations that is actually creating dysfunction and disruption? And is it time to actually put some things in place that are going to make you healthier, more productive, and more profitable? This tool is a game changer. But before you go down this road of putting this tool in place, if you put this tool in place and you neglect it, it will probably cause more harm than it would have if you would have not done it at all. This is not a tool to play around with because it's like opening Pandora's box. However, if you do this and you commit to it and everybody's committed to it, it will change your companies and the relationships that you have with business partners and customers forever. It is powerful.
Yeah, I was just going to
add. Yeah. So if they're unwilling, for instance, if I'm the disrespected one and I have a more reserved demeanor and I'm not willing to sort of approach Eddie one-on-one, if he and I have the conflict, then guess who has to sort of stay in their stuff? I do, right? You've set the table for them to, you know, actually resolve things and move together. Now, if they come to you and they do this next thing called gossip, then you as the leader get to say, have you talked to Eddie? And if they say no, then you say, when are you going to talk to Eddie? And they say, I don't think he'll listen. When are you going to talk to Eddie? Well, every time when are you going to talk to Eddie? See what I'm saying? So, again, this is some hard work. And it's going to be uncomfortable at the front end. But let me tell you what, when you actually start to live this out with each other, it actually builds trust. It's when things go unaddressed that trust erodes. Am I right? I'll tell you a quick story. Construction owner, Columbus firm, came, took his entire team through our training, implemented the social covenant. About three sessions go by. We were doing a session every 2 weeks, giving space in between each session for them to actually dig in and put to work some of these tools. Third session's about to happen. He sends me an email and he said, Patty, we've got problems. The social covenant isn't working. I said, all right. So we get on the phone together. I said, let's call him Jim. Jim, what's going on? He goes, the social covenant isn't working. I said, why not? He said, because I'm not carrying it out. Now, this is the CEO and president, owner of the company. I said, all right. Well, what do you want to do about it? He says, I think I should apologize. I said, I think that's a great idea. He came before his team that afternoon. We did some quick introductions. I said, Jim, is there anything you need to share or want to share with the team? And he pulled out a piece of paper and he stood before his guys. These are all tough, not highly transactional, non-emotional construction guys, right? These are get-it-done guys, right? They still have dirt kind of in and around their eyes, sockets and everything. Walt gets up there and he literally begins to cry in front of his team. He says, "I've let you down." And he does a six-step apology in front of his team, which I'll show you real quick here in a moment. And his team begins to cry. These tough, non-emotional, non-relational guys are now saying, "Jim, we love you. We wouldn't want to work for anyone else." Guess what? They're doing affirmations with each other, and they don't even know it. They actually went through a very uncomfortable stage of what it looks like to build this into their organization, because it's not going to be easy, right? But it made their organization so much better. It allowed for communication and trust to be rebuilt, because at that time, trust was eroded. Nobody trusted anybody in the company. Again, big commitment to put a tool like this into place. And if you're going to do it, either go all in or don't go in at all. All right? Let me show you this. Here's our gossip thing here, just real quick. Great people talk about vision and ideas. Average people talk about things. Small people talk about other people. Smaller people let them. Even smaller people join them. And even smaller people tell others. Hey, we all know gossip's a problem. You just got to make a choice. We're not going to gossip anymore. Gossip destroys relationships, period, end of story. So here's our recommended six-step apology. Step number one, if you're the violator, if you're the one who really has created the breach, your first thing is to state the offense. Tell what you did, all right? I did it. Number two, admit you were wrong. Now, I'm not sure if you guys know this or not, but when God created men and women, he gave women muscles within their mouth area that he didn't give to men. This is true. You're laughing. This is true. Watch this. Now, men have a harder time forming the W words. Like, see? I'll try this here because it's, I haven't practiced in a while. Wrong. All right, so let's try it together, men. I was wrong. Wow, okay, that's good. See, it takes practice for us. Now, women are better at it because they're usually telling us, "Hey, you were wrong," all right? But for us guys, we got to get used to saying that word, "I was." See, it's tough, but stand in front of the mirror and just exercise your lips a little bit, and you'll be able to do this second step pretty easily, all right? But no, seriously, admit it. I was wrong. Because if you can't admit you were wrong, it's going to be hard to take the third step, which is to actually apologize. And again, it's much like the affirmation. Make it direct. Don't say, "I want to apologize." Don't say, "Apologize. I'm sorry. All right? I apologize for hurting you in this way." So that's step three. You'd think, well, that ought to put a wrap on it right there, right? Nope. Three more steps, friends. Here we go. Number four, ask them for forgiveness. Will you forgive me? Or when you can, will you forgive me? By the way, that's a question. When you ask a question, what do you have to do? Wait for an answer. That's right. Will you forgive me? If you've hurt someone in a very deep personal way, they may not be ready to forgive you in that moment. Your job as the individual who gives the apology is to put it out there and give them the time sometimes to process and think about it. Okay? Will you forgive me, or when you can, will you forgive me? Here's number five. Ask for accountability. Will you help me never to do this to you again? Will you tell me if you see any behavior that looks like this? This is a step that nobody is asking for in most of their apologies. They're not saying, I want your help. I want to improve. I want to get better. I don't want to do this to you again. So you ask for accountability. And then number six, ask, is there anything else? Now, husbands, let me school you up here so that you don't destroy your marriages. If you ask your ladies, is there anything else? You better be serious, because if she doesn't think you're serious, first of all, she's not going to tell you, all right? But if she really believes that you're serious, she is going to tell you, because here's the way a woman's brain works. They rarely, if ever, forget anything. If you went to grade school with your wife and you kicked her in the shin in third grade on the playground, she still remembers that you kicked her in the shin in third grade on the playground, and she probably brings it up every once in a while, okay? It's just the way their brains work. It's okay. It's just an ism. It's not wrong. So knowing that that's a reality, she actually remembers some things that you've never even, you're clueless about. It just went over your head, all right? So if you ask your ladies, is there anything else, sit down, get your notepad out, and get ready to write a few things down. Now, ladies, once you tell your guys what's on your mind, you can't go back. You either believe that you've shared it and you trust them and love them enough to, in their way, deal with it, or you don't, or you just don't bring it up, okay? And pace yourself. If you've got 15 things on your list, narrow it down to one. We like things in small doses. Give me one thing, come back to me in 20 minutes, and let's talk about another thing, all right? Don't give me it all, because I won't remember any of it, all right? If you can do that, ladies, and guys, if you can do that with your spouses, your communication will actually go up to another level, all right? So I went a little long in this session, but it's good stuff, I hope. These helpful tools for you? Good deal. Any questions before I turn it over to these guys here? We've done it a couple different ways. I have companies that actually put it in their HR manuals as an expectation that when you get hired on in our company, that this is the expectation of behavior. Now remember, this is a behavioral agreement, not a performance agreement. That's another part of your HR manuals. All right, so if you're going to implement it in your companies, you may even call it, you know, whatever your company name is, promise, you know, because covenant may not have the right connotation. However, I've got a company in Cincinnati that actually calls it their code of conduct, and they put in a modified version of it with seven clear things that they expect behaviorally from everybody who comes to work for them. And then the process of going one-on-one and resolving it in this way so that everybody knows when there's conflict, this is how we do it. So it's an expectation. Now, just like anything else, expectations need reinforcement. If you got new employees and it was created by an existing group, that existing group has to help the new employees get caught up. So you have to have evaluation, conversation, expectation, so that it can become something. Yeah, here's the thing. If they're really unwilling, that means that they really were unwilling to do step four, which is forgive. They're holding on to bitterness, resentment, anger, all right? And they're becoming hindered by it. You're not. You smile at them and you say, I love you. We took care of this. I already own my stuff. I hope you can get to a place where you can own your stuff too. Because this sounds like this might be something for you. Do not apologize for something you didn't do. No one in this room should ever apologize for something you never did, just to appease someone or make them go away.